Welcome to another episode of the Jump Ball Podcast. I'm your host, Mo Dakiel, and today our guest is Jonathan Abrams, a best-selling author of Boys Among Men, writer for Bleacher Report magazine, a Grantland alum. We talked about DeMar DeRozan. We dove into the debate between the old generation and the new generation, social activism amongst athletes, and the NBA in general. You ready to tip it off? Hey, Jonathan, how you doing?
Good. How you doing, Mo?
All good, man. All good. Just enjoying that West Coast life. I really wanted to talk to you because I got a chance to read your piece on DeMar DeRozan on Bleacher Report magazine, and I thought it was just awesome. It was a very clever way to interview somebody. For those who haven't read it yet, there's going to be a link on my site to it, but if you haven't read it, it's kind of going through the soundtrack of, you know, the DeMar DeRozan life, and he kind of narrates it almost as to what, how each of these songs sort of, what the meaning takes place for him and all that good stuff. And I wanted to ask, Jonathan, you know, how did you guys come up with that?
Yeah, it was just a different way to kind of tell somebody's life story. We're kind of kicking around different ideas, and DeMar being from Compton, we knew that music had held a special place in his heart and that he was close to Kendrick Lamar and playing in Toronto. He has Drake hanging around in the locker room and on the sideline every game.
Right.
So we thought that he'd be a pretty good person to kind of lay out his life in that way.
Awesome. Awesome. And then how, you know, so all of these were songs of his choosing and what he feels about them. You know, was there anything there that kind of like any sort of insights you gained when you're like, oh, that's one of your jams? Like, what did that kind of tell you about him?
Well, I mean, there were a lot of songs that I could have probably predicted. He had a couple Kendrick Lamar songs, NWA and DJ Quick, and all those guys are from Compton. I kidded around with him because he didn't have anybody from, or any songs from The Game. And I thought that was a big omission from him. And it's probably because I'm getting old, but I never heard of Kevin Gates before. Do you know Kevin Gates?
I actually don't. I'm not, you know, I'm not up to date on the latest guys. You know, so I think like I kind of do stop somewhere around Kendrick Lamar and so on. So
yeah,
I've fallen off.
Yeah. So I had to go back and find out who Kevin was and probably dating myself. And then I was a little surprised that he had a Beanie Siegel song, too, because Siegel's from Philadelphia, but he picked one of his songs as well.
Right. Right. I was just really happy he had, I mean, obvious him being from Compton. I mean, there was no way he wasn't going to have NWA on there. And I just sort of loved that, you know, Straight Outta Compton was his association for SC.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a quick year, but yeah, the Straight Outta Compton was his choice for USC. So the way that we did that, kind of first we had him list like his favorite songs, and then I was like, okay, so this song is a moment in your life when you were at USC, or what song was the song that exemplified when you got drafted, or what song exemplified when you found out you were going to be an all-star. So we kind of went through the list that way as well.
Gotcha. No, I mean, it was pretty great. I thought it was really awesome. And then, gosh, I can't remember what song it was, but I really did like him talking about how when he was younger, he would have, if he was a younger free agent, he would have signed with the Lakers just to go back home. But he's really excited about what they're building in Toronto. And you know, him talking about Kobe being at one place for, you know, his entire career, talking about Duncan being at the same place for his entire career. I thought it was kind of a fun thing of him talking about, like, I'm starting something in Toronto, I'm not ready to leave. I thought that was a really cool side of him that I wasn't sure about.
Yeah, because you look at those guys, and especially being from Los Angeles, you would expect him to want to try to go back the first chance he get. This is a guy who went maybe 15 miles for his college choice, and then he gets drafted in the NBA and he's going to a foreign country for the first time
right.
in his life. And he knows nothing about Toronto, nothing about Canada. But in the years since, I think he's really built the solid stones for a solid legacy, and he's going to try to keep up with that in the future. And I think it takes a lot of ability to look into the future to see that that's where you what you want for yourself, rather than trying to go and chase rings or going to live back home or seeking out a more comfortable atmosphere. That this is where you're going to put your roots down, and this is where you're going to try to get your jersey hanging up in the rafters in 15, 20 years.
Yeah, and he's having a hell of a year, too, being super efficient at mid-range game, and it's been phenomenal. It's been fun to watch. The other side of it, too, is just there were so many rumors when he was going to be a free agent that it was totally he's coming back to L.A., so that whole thing was just refreshing. And, of course, as a former Trojan alum, it always helps to have big pieces written about the SC alum. So, you know, when are you writing about Nick Young?
Oh, man. I know. But, you know, the good thing is that the program is doing really good this year. I mean, I'm keeping my fingers crossed. I'm not trying to get my hopes up too high, but I'm hoping they can do something come March.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're just fresh off of a big win against UCLA. Last night we came back and beat Washington down the stretch at Washington, so hopefully we can get it going. I'm with you. I'm definitely keeping my eye on it and hoping they're going to do well. Another thing I did want to talk to you about, it's been all over the news, and I'm not so much want to talk about this particular incident, but the whole Barkley-LeBron sort of feud that's sort of been sparked up lately. It's not so much, I don't want to talk about that as much as I want to talk about, I'm seeing it more and more, but it's like a lot of old timers are coming at the younger generation. I'm seeing a lot more, you know, last year we saw it with Steph Curry and what the Warriors were doing and the number of guys from, you know, 90s basketball, 80s basketball, talking about like they'd never be able to do it in my era, they wouldn't be able to do it in my time. Is it me, or is it more just kind of like get off my lawn type of attitude, or is there more to it? Do they have a case to it? What are your thoughts when you see and hear those things?
I mean, I think it's that generation is always going to want to try to protect their legacy and what they stood for. You're always going to want to think that you played with the best players and you went through the best competition. And, you know, I think 20 years from now, we'll be hearing LeBron talk about how, you know, he had it tougher than whatever generation is currently playing. I mean, when you're in it, that's what you think. But we've obviously seen the game evolve into a sport that is a lot different from how it was back in the 90s. I mean, you don't know if you could have did what other players are doing now because the game is so different, the rules are different, and you know, I think the game has changed largely for the better in that time span.
Yeah, I definitely think it is much more interesting now, and the level of talent that the NBA has is phenomenal. And I kind of look at it and I'm like, I wish the old timers would, you know, enjoy what they did, because I don't look at it like, you know, what Jordan, it's tough to compare guys generationally. Like you talked about, the game's changed, the rules have changed so much. It's hard to say, you know, the guys at the 80s and 90s had it harder or easier versus the guys now. It's totally different in regards to everything. There's some aspects that are harder, some aspects that I think are easier. When you look at the game.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I cut you off.
No, I was just saying that I agree. I mean, you know, Bill Russell won 11 championships in his day, and he has the most, you know, of all time. But there was, what, 8-10 teams back then? I mean,
yeah.
The game is just going to keep evolving.
Right, exactly. And I love that you said it, too. Like, 20 years from now, we're going to have LeBron saying something. You know, we're all going to point back to what he said to Charles. You know, go, do you remember that time? I think that's going to be something we're going to see down the road. I think you're right on with that. When you look at the game now, what do you see? What's the with so much talent and stuff? You know, you kind of said it. You know, you like where the game's going now. Do you think this is the greatest the game has been?
I mean, that's tough for me to say, because I'm always going to love like the mid '90s.
Right.
Rivalries, and even a little bit earlier than that. I mean, Magic Johnson is my favorite player of all time. And then those Bulls teams, that's always going to be the the NBA that I grew up with and my favorite NBA. But, you know, guys are just so much more athletically skilled these days, where you have seven-footers popping out for threes all the time. You have guys with incredible handles like Kyrie and Steph and CP3, to where I just think aesthetically and watching the game now, it's just so much more pleasing than it's ever been.
So when we look at the game now, I mean, with where we're at, where NBA's been able to draw globally more so than they ever have in the past, you know, we have Antetokounmpo in Milwaukee, we have Porzingis in New York, Embiid in Philly, and Dirk obviously kind of is the captain of the all international team in Dallas, you know, even though he's towards the end of his career. You know, I just look at it and I think a lot of that's from the older generation sort of building the game up, you know. And that's kind of, I feel like that's why the NBA is pretty much, I think it's probably about as close to as great as it's, the greatest it's ever been so far.
Yeah, and I think you can draw a direct line of lineage from that 92 Dream Team to where that was the first time people really kind of appreciated those type of players on a global level and got to see them play in person. And that's the moment that kind of inspired, you know, the first wave of international players like Dirk and other guys who then inspired a lot of other players. So you can see that direct line of passage in the NBA.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then another thing I wanted to talk with you about a little bit, you know, we're seeing more and more player engagement in kind of politics and social matters. You know, what do you see there when you see it? What do you, you know, what are you thinking? It's not just the election, but it's overall. I mean, you know, from the police shootings really kind of sort of have struck up that chord. You know, what do you see with that?
Yeah, I mean, I think players are definitely becoming more advocates and talking about social policy and social issues. And I think it's important because for such a long time, you saw athletes between like Muhammad Ali and now to this generation of athletes, they just didn't talk to those type of issues. You saw Michael Jordan obviously staying away from it for most of his career. And now after seeing so many athletes stand up and take stands, he's now donated a couple million, I think, late last year after the uprising. But, I mean, it's important and it's good to see guys like LeBron and Carmelo speak out about this. But you also have to think of what's next and what can actually be done. And I think that's the next step in all this.
Yeah, definitely. It's funny that you brought up Muhammad Ali, because back at the good old USC days, I was in a sports commentary class with J.A. Adande, and I actually wrote a part of the assignment for his class was, you know, write about a historical figure, and I kind of wrote how I didn't think we'd ever see another guy like Muhammad Ali in the sense of the social activism that we're seeing now. Granted, none of these guys have had to pay the price that Ali did, but it is awesome to see, you know. And it's not just NBA guys. Like, you know, this past summer with the WNBA, I think it was the Minnesota Lynx players who were wearing the shirt after the shooting in Minnesota, you know, and it's kind of a fun time to see the activism sort of sprout up in a very important time where everything feels politically charged right now.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, in this day and age, it would probably be pretty difficult for athletes not to speak about it, because there's so many ways that athletes can get in touch with fans now through social media that they would, you know, at some point have to almost take a stand. But to still see a lot of athletes be proactive about it, to see what CP3 and Carmelo and LeBron did and Dwayne Wade did at the ESPYs last year, to see Draymond Green be involved with Rise. I mean, it's encouraging. I just want to figure out, you know, what's next, kind of beyond the words and symbolic actions, and you know, playing, organizing a basketball game between cops and kids, like what can fundamentally be done to I guess help shape the future. But you know, that's for greater minds than myself to figure out.
Oh, I'd want you in the room more than me. let me put it that way. I think you're definitely a good mind in that sense. You know, I think it's also, do you fear that there be any backlash towards, you know, from the mainstream, just the mainstream fans in general? You know, we saw it with the NFL and Kaepernick, whether you agree with him or not, it's a different story, but just the amount of backlash that he took, you know, when he did it, you know, do you see kind of any of that trickling in the NBA? I haven't seen much of it from my end.
No, I haven't seen much of it. And I also, nobody has taken the extreme stand of kneeling or setting out the anthem. And I think, you know, Kaepernick being the first person to do that was going to assume the brunt of whatever was to come. And I don't really see that, you know, relenting for him. It's sad to say, but I almost think that if he would have actually had a good season, it probably would have alleviated a lot of that stuff for him. But unfortunately, the 49ers are pretty awful.
That's a whole nother podcast. They are quite bad. But yeah, let's kind of move away from the less heavier stuff and, you know, try to get to the lighter things. And speaking of lighter things, you know, I need to tell you about my buddy's gelato place, Uli's Gelateria, here in downtown LA. It's in the Spring Arcade in between 5th and 6th Street, you know, right on Spring Street, you know, nice little arcade area. They have the best flavors. I don't know what the gelato scene's like over in Charlotte, but it's a great spot here. You know, they have so many different flavors. Again, I'm a creature of habit, so I usually only just stick with my two, which is sea salt caramel and speculoos cookies, but you can go there and try all the samples there. Uli's Gelateria, I highly recommend it, Jonathan. If you're, you know, back in LA and in the downtown area, you definitely got to check it out.
Now, I will say the gelato scene in Charlotte is severely lacking, so I'm going to have to.
Okay, well, that's it. Then, you know, I'm going to be honest with you, Jonathan. Next time you come out to LA, gelato's on me, man.
That's a promise.
Done. Book it. So we've gotten kind of heavy so far with what we've talked about. I want to dive into what your thoughts so far on the NBA season in general. You know, what have you seen? What's anything standing out to you in particular?
Well, I mean, I think it's all the headline stories are pretty exciting. Watching what players are doing on a individual basis. You know, I think people rightly predicted, or, you know, everybody wondered what Russell Westbrook would do once Kevin Durant left Oklahoma City. And, you know, it kind of in your wildest dreams, you kind of imagine that he could possibly put up numbers like these, but to see him actually do it and to do it through this long of a season has been pretty amazing and special to watch, even though he is a Bruin. We'll let that fly.
Yeah, we weren't going to mention that part.
another Pac. It was still the Pac-10 when he was there. Another Pac-10 yep. guy, James Harden. I mean, the Pac-10 is really showing out, huh?
It is.
Even Nick Young has had a resurgent season for a little while, at least.
Definitely. You know, I mean, hey, look, we got our Trojans in there. We have Taj Gibson in Chicago, Vucevic in Orlando. You know, we're sprinkled around. You know, we're making our ways around. We're working our way back up. Your boy DeRozan is carrying the flag for us. So, you know, we need to keep him keeping up the season he's going through. But I like, you know, you're right, though. Westbrook's been phenomenal. Harden getting moved to point guard has been great. You know, is there anything like, do you think when you look at the two of them, where you're at on the MVP race between the two?
Yeah, it's really a tough call. I think right now I give the edge to Harden just because of I mean, everything he does for that team and where they're at now, record-wise, I think those two combinations are really incredible, even though you can't really... And saying that, you can't take away from what Russ is doing almost single-handedly for his team. I mean, it's tough. Who do you have?
You know, for me, I've said it before on the podcast, if Westbrook holds, you know, a triple-double and gets the team into the playoffs, I think you got to give it to him. If you can maintain a triple-double throughout the entire season... You know, over an 82-game stretch, that's phenomenal. And I don't care if people think he's hunting for assists and whatnot. It's still very hard to get those, you know, especially assists, because you have to have your teammates make shots. So I kind of lean that way. I think Harden's going to end up winning it, you know, and he's had a great season. He's been phenomenal so far. And nobody really had the Rockets at third in the Western Conference, I think, at the start of the season, you know. Maybe the highest people had them was, you know, them being in that second tier of the West, but with the Clippers sort of falling off, I think that's kind of where they're at. And I think, you know, you can't go wrong with either guy. I know Westbrook sputtered a little bit, and the Thunder are a bit in trouble right now with Cantor's injury for punching a chair, but it's definitely it's a beautiful thing to watch at the very least.
So, what do you, let me ask you this. What do you think the odds are that one other team other than the Warriors and the Cavaliers end up in the finals?
Gosh, it's slim. It's a hard thing to predict. You know, if everybody's healthy on both sides, it's Cavs-Warriors. I just don't think there's any team out on the West Coast that really has the firepower that can withstand how good the Warriors are, and they're only going to get better as the season goes on, as they continue to gel and get comfortable. I know the Cavs are going through, you know, a little bit of a turbulence right now, but you know, they're still up in the East, the number one seed. You know, as long as everybody's healthy, I know that Kevin Love had his MRI on his back and there was no structural damage, but it's still, you know, something that they're going to keep their eye on. But as long as nobody gets injured and so on, I think it's going to be tough for anybody to beat either of those teams. You know, I think if a team was going to beat somebody, I think, you know, I wouldn't sleep on the Spurs, you know, in the West. And, you know, Toronto, if they make a move in the trade deadline, say, you know, they find a way to get Millsap or something like that, that could be pretty tough, you know, for the Cavs. But at the end of the day, I would be shocked if it's not a Warriors-Cavs, you know, a rubber match, is that what you refer to it when it's the third time in a row? Like I kind of want to see it anyways and just see these two teams battle it out for you know, who takes the crown.
Yeah, so I mean, this is the other thing that I was thinking about. So say if it's the Warriors and the Cavs again this season, I mean, what's preventing it from being another rematch again next year? And then, I mean, is it bad for the NBA if it's the same team in the final 4 or 5 years in a row?
I don't know. I mean, you know.
That's pretty bad.
I'm sorry, I cut you off. Go ahead.
No, that's pretty bad when you're talking about. I know it's far off in the future, but those two teams are so dominant right now in their conferences, and it's hard to see anybody overcoming them for the next, you know, 1, 2, 3 years. It, when you're talking about balance and competitiveness in a league that, I just wish the NBA could find a way to balance it out.
Yeah, you know, it's something that's always talked about. But if you look at history, I mean, how many times the Celtics made it in the 80s? How many times the Lakers made it? You know, and they had their dominant run. The Bulls 6 times in the finals in the 90s. You know, the Lakers were in, gosh, I think it was like 5 finals in the early 2000s to 2010. You know, the Spurs have been consistent. I think, you know, we kind of just have usually 4 or 5 teams that can win it all. I think it's bad and good in the sense of, you know, that rivalry between the Cavs and Warriors is really kind of building up. So the ratings for when they play, even in the regular season, is huge. And I think, you know, if they both make it to the finals this year, you can kind of build on it. I wouldn't say it's a lock next year or the year after, just because so many things can happen, player movement, young guys. You know, you have really talented squads being developed in Philadelphia. You have a lot of talent in Milwaukee. You know, these are teams that are, as these guys get a little older and mature, you know, at the same time, LeBron's, you know, he's on the downside of his career, and it's not saying he's playing like it, but, you know, it's father time's undefeated. It gets everybody at some point. So I think, you know, you're going to slowly start to see the Cavs somewhat decline. Now, the Warriors are pretty damn young, so, you know, they might be around for a while, but at the same time, you have teams like Minnesota threatening. You know, if Minnesota can get their act together and work their way, I know they're difficult run this season, but there's definitely a chance for them to kind of build themselves back up. And, you know, if Houston can add another piece, you know, next summer, there might be a you might start to see more challenging. I think it does is it puts the other NBA teams in a position where you have to go get better. That's it. If you want to compete, you have to go get better and find a way. So I think it puts front offices stressed in that sense. But I think it's fun right now. I know people are talking about the Warriors are a bit boring right now, but NBA basketball at the end of January until the All-Star break is generally pretty boring at this point. These are the dog days.
Yeah. But in most years, you can say that you can see like 5-6 teams maybe winning a title out of 30.
Yeah.
You know, this year, there's two teams I can see winning a title. Same as last year.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right in that sense. You know, but it's this year and last year it's been that way. But we got to see how things shake up at the end of this summer. You know, with free agency and what happens. I mean, we have guys that are free agents like Chris Paul. You have Blake Griffin. You know, one of those guys moves, it could change the entire landscape depending where they land. You know, of the NBA. You know, like for me personally, I would have loved it if Durant had gone to Boston. Because I think that would have been the more fun story of him versus LeBron in the Eastern Conference and kind of working their way to the finals. But we can't all get what we want. And I don't blame KD for going to Golden State. When we judge players by how many rings they win, you got to go where they get, where the rings are.
Yeah, I agree. You know, as much as I didn't like it, I can see how it worked out personally or why he would make that decision. But let me ask you this. I'm turning this whole interview thing around.
It's fun. It's a conversation, man.
Do you think that in the future we're going to look back on it even – is it going to look even worse on the Oklahoma City Thunder that they had Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden and never won a championship? Because right now it looks bad. But those three guys are just getting so much better individually that, I mean, they should have won something.
I 100% agree with you. I think it's going to look worse in the future. I thought they overreacted when they traded Harden. You know, it was problem coming down to money. I get it. The owners wanted to avoid the luxury tax, and it was a they weren't prepared to really go that deep into it. But the fact of the matter was, and you know, he's a restricted free agent. You know, if they don't agree to that extension, you can play out the year, and then he's a restricted free agent that summer. So you could match any offer he gets. So you can kind of put it out there, and you've seen teams do it that, you know, we're matching any offer he gets. It doesn't matter. And it kind of, you know, that a restricted free agent really kind of challenges agents and those players into coming up with a deal sometimes, because other teams are like, it's no point in trying to sign him, you know, they're going to match. I think they kind of, it was a knee-jerk reaction, and I think, you know, the story of it is, you know, that they only gave him a couple hours to decide on taking the extension or trading him, and they just come off the finals. Like, they were the favorites to go back to the finals from the West that year, you know, and I was with the Clippers at the time. I mean, the second that trade happened, all of our phones were blowing up. We were excited as the Clippers. We were like, okay, we got a chance now. Let's, you know, let's get to work kind of thing. And I think that was a miscalculation on Presti's part in that sense. And of course, we don't know the organizational stress that he might have had from ownership and so on about what to build on it. But I think you're right. I think it's going to be a terrible look. It doesn't look good now. It's going to be even worse down the road when we have the Hall of Fame inductions of Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and James Harden. we're just going to look at it going like, why couldn't they find a way to keep this core together?
I mean, if you ask me, like, to put together, if you're playing NBA Jam and you can get three players, you know, those might be the first three players that you want to put together.
Yeah, I mean, if they were playing
to have that in real life.
Yeah, I mean, they could do that in the Ice Cube League this summer, you know. Yeah. I mean, like, you know, they played really well off of each other. You know, Westbrook dominating drives to the rim, KD obviously raining threes, and Harden just being an unbelievable playmaker off the bench for them and creating for everybody else. I mean, that was a great trio that it would have been impossible to really stop down the road. I mean, they were just getting into figuring out NBA basketball. They were still learning the game at that sense, you know, and I mean, they had just lost to the Heat in the finals, but they were the team that could have beaten the Heat the rest of the way, you know, and made that a challenge. And that could have been a fun dynasty that we could have seen. But it's hard when you put in all the other stuff of you got to figure out salary cap and things like that. I think they just chose wrong. You know, they bet on Ibaka and, you know, and his extension and you know, they didn't bet on Harden, and now Harden's probably going to win the MVP.
Him or Westbrook, so we'll see. But yeah, I don't know. You just go back and look at it and think about it, and that was a fun team to watch. That, you know, we probably didn't even appreciate what we had at the time as fans. You know, even going back to when they had Jeff Green on that team, and Jeff Green was a pretty good complimentary piece on that young team.
Absolutely. I think also, I wonder if part of it was they thought Jeff Green was going to live up to the lofty expectations that are set. And sometimes it's unfair, the expectations that are set on these guys. But I wonder if they thought, you know, they'd be able to replace James with, you know, some of the stuff that Jeff Green could do. And I don't know if that ever really materialized for them. One thing I did want to ask you, because you did write, this is way early in the season before the season started. I don't know if you can tell how much I follow your stuff. But you did write about the Wolves and Thibodeau, you know, coming off the year sabbatical and the young team, you know. Are you surprised with how they started off the season? I mean, it's been a real shaky start for them.
Yeah, I am. I mean, I expected them to compete for a playoff spot. You know, I expected Thibodeau to get in there and be able to instill some good, solid defensive principles. And I expected them to collectively be able to take the next step, you know, almost like a young Oklahoma City Thunder team. And for them to be struggling this poorly in the season has definitely been a surprise.
Yeah, you know, and it's one of those things. I think it's really hard with super young teams, and they're a super young team. I mean, their first-round draft pick is older than Towns, Wiggins, you know, two of their main three core guys. So I think it's definitely a challenge, and it's a hard situation and so on. But the funny thing is they're still not really out of the playoff race. They're kind of hanging around, and I think that's kind of a statement of how bad that 8 seed is in the West, you know, record wise. Do you think though they can kind of start to climb their way up? If you take away last night's game where they got smashed by Cleveland, they had been on an uptick and had been playing better. You know, do you think they can make a late season run at that playoff spot?
I mean, it's tough for me to see that happening at this point of the year. They're 11 games under 500. You know, it's tough to see a playoff team making that happen, or it's tough to see them making the playoffs this late in the season with the record that poorly. Although, like you said, you know, normally you're accustomed to the Western Conference 8 seed having 50 wins, you know?
Yeah.
And this year it's going to be different.
Yeah. I mean, this year I think it's going to be a sub 500 record. You know, right now Portland's at that spot and they're 6 games below 500. So I think, you know, if they can get hot enough, you know, right time sort of thing, and they also need a couple of teams to get very cold. But I think they're still in the mix, but they're not quite I don't think they'll make it. I think, you know, it's they're too young of a team, and they're still learning Thibodeau's defense. And I think really next year is when we're going to really kind of begin to see that leap of the Minnesota Timberwolves, and hopefully they can compete with your Golden State Warriors so that we can try to at least have a challenger for the throne.
Yeah, maybe I'll just rerun that whole story again next year and say that this is their year.
That's all you got to do. Just tweak a few things, you know, a couple little edits, you're good to go. One thing I did want to, it would be criminal of me if we didn't talk about it, because it's really actually one of my favorite books. You're the author of Boys Among Men, the prep to NBA revolution. I totally butchered your title. I know I did. I just referred to it as always as Boys Among Men.
It's a long subtitle. We could have shortened up the subtitle.
Well, I apologize for that, but it is one of my favorite books. I'm a notoriously slow reader, and I flew through it probably in record time. I just couldn't put it down. You know, what possessed you to kind of want to write that story and write about that, about these young guys that not just made it into the NBAs, but the ones who didn't make it?
So, I mean, what year did you graduate high school?
I graduated in 99.
So we're near the same age, because I graduated in 01. And for me, I was always a big basketball junkie. So I was following guys in high school and the top recruits. And it was at that time that if you were a top recruit, then you would just bypass college and go straight to the NBA. So 2001 was Tyson Chandler, Eddie Curry, and Kwame Brown were high school seniors. And I was following them real time. And Eddie Curry was supposed to be the next Shaq. And Kwame Brown was the next KG. And these guys are really supposed to just take the NBA by storm. And then, you know, I get into my professional career, you know, back when I started covering the Clippers in 2007, even that seems so long ago. But seeing where those guys' careers kind of manifested was kind of like, okay, what happened on their way to stardom? So that was one of the ideas for why I wanted to write the book. And then another one was that I had done some profiles for Grantland on guys like Gerald Green, or guys like, you know, your guy Sean Livingston, and
right.
And even guys who maybe had just average type NBA careers, just for them to get to that level of sustainability seemed like it was tougher than guys who had gone to college. So, you know, I think it was really the combination of those two things that made me want to explore that whole generation of players and look at not just the LeBrons and Kobes and KGs, but the guys who, you know, either just made it for a cup of coffee or never made it at all.
Yeah, I mean, there are some real great stories in there. I highly recommend my listeners read it. There, some of my favorite stuff was, you know, Antonio Davis taking in Jermaine O'Neal and kind of taking him under his wing, and sort of along those lines of stories like that I don't know how much of the public knows about, and especially the guys who didn't make it were some of those. I mean, I didn't know most of the guys who didn't make it. Like you, I followed hoops, you know, religiously, but I wasn't heavily plugged into the high school scene and the recruiting, so I didn't know a lot of these guys. But it was just so many different great stories and different angles. Like, you know, you even went into the towards the end of the book when you go into the college route and the one and done guys, and, you know, the effect it has on coaches, the effect it has on, you know, like Calipari saying, like, you know, if you want to help me stay another year, if you want to help your family, you got to go to the NBA. Like that just makes sense. And things like that, like so many different great stories. And I thought it was an awesome book, man.
I really appreciate that.
Before I let you go, I gotta ask though, were there any stories that got edited out that, you know, you want to share or anything? I know it was a while ago. It was, you know, I'm late to the party on the Abrams interview train for the book. But was there anything there or one of your favorite stories in there that's in the book that, you know, when my listeners read it, they can make sure they pay attention to?
You know, I think the good thing about being able to write a book is that nobody tells you when to stop. So I think I really emptied out my notebook for it. I can't really think of anything that was, you know, particularly juicy or that was left out. I think a lot of the Kevin Garnett anecdotes, I think, really like tell you, like, they help explain like who he is, like,
right,
and how he became the person and player he is. So that was fun to report. It was also interesting that Moses Malone and Daryl Dawkins were two of the first guys to make that jump, mm-hmm, from high school to the pros, and I was able to interview them for the book before they passed away. So I was just appreciative of being able to get their viewpoints in, especially as two trendsetters in that whole movement.
Right. Definitely. And those are also really interesting parts of the book too, is because that stuff I knew they went, but I didn't understand the dynamics and the history behind it, you know, and you know, the what led them to do that. Look, you know, I'm telling my fans, I'm also going to add a link to the Amazon site to get the book on the podcast where they can find this. You know, Jonathan, I've taken up a ton of your time. You know, the listeners probably won't know, but had several computer problems while talking to you, and I appreciate your patience. You know, what are you working on? Is there anything you want to plug? You know, where can the listeners find your stuff? I'm an avid fan. You're not. I know where to find you, but what can my listeners do to find your stuff?
You know, I'm up on the Bleacher Report magazine, and I just turned in a draft for a book that's a oral history of the Wire that was really fun to work on, and I'm excited to get out if you've seen that television show. So
love that show. This is going to be great. I might rewatch it. Let me ask you this. Should I rewatch it before reading the book, or should I read the book while rewatching it?
I would say probably before.
Okay. So I'm going to get started on it now. I'm going to start to rewatch The Wire in anticipation of the oral history coming up. Hey, Jonathan, I really appreciate your time, man. You know, I don't know if you saw, yesterday was National Signing Day. Our Trojans had a hell of a day.
Oh yeah, no, I was paying attention all throughout the day. Very happy with it.
Very, very excited. Hopefully, maybe you come out this way for a game this season. We'll tailgate together.
That sounds like a good one.
All right, Jonathan, thank you so much for your time, man. And that'll do it for today. Big thank you to our guest, Jonathan Abrams. Please like us, rate us, leave comments on iTunes, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. Have a great day, guys.